Hi,
Hi,
it's
everyone.
Amo.
And Zoe. And we're the host of the
And we're
Mr.
the host
Pause
of the
podcast.
Mr. First podcast. And it's another
And
interview.
it is. It's a very special episode. We have a lot of special episodes lately, don't we?
Yeah, we do. We're into special stuff nowadays.
Because we're special. Oh my God.
Obviously.
Yes. So, because of our specialness, no, obviously not. But because she's an author. We are interviewing Kimberly Brooker Bradley today, who is the author of The War That Saved My Life, which we read on the podcast, and she's also an author of other great books like Fighting Words and Jefferson's
Yes.
Guns.
And so before you listen to this interview, we would recommend you to listen to our review of the book
Yes, this
because
is
there
our
is a
official
lot.
spoiler warning. Yes. Also, we're going to write this in the description, but just a bit of trigger warning for sexual abuse and depression, maybe.
Depression. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's it, isn't it?
But yeah, it isn't very.
Yes.
Yeah, censored content. You be
It's
the
not
judge.
very sensitive. We have a few. We asked how does she write about difficult topics? And so if you hear that question coming up and if this triggers
You
you
can
can
just
just
skip
fast forward.
minutes.
Yeah, you don't have to skip the whole interview, or you can skip the whole interview if you want to. Yeah,
Yeah, but a
so
short review from our side is I think it was again such a great experience. Like
yes, she was so
I think
nice.
it's every time, but we are always so genuinely shocked how nice and open all of these authors
Amazing.
are.
Yeah, truly.
And
Yeah, it's
she like
always.
the extra reached out that she would be excited to talk to us, and I think that's such a cool
Yeah.
reassurance for us too that
Yes.
authors would
It's
be
really
interested in
so
us.
amazing because, when we started this interview, we interviewed Anne for the first time, and I used to be so nervous be when I showed up before an interview
Me
because I
too,
was just
totally.
afraid of how it would go, how would we talk to this person we haven't actually met. And every time it's just such an amazing experience. We just have so much fun, and this was also an amazing experience, so
I think also to the podcast, it adds a new voice,
it
like
does.
literally speaking.
It
And
adds
I
a new
think
voice, yes, every time.
it's
We love it.
and I think it just gives a new depth, a new perspective of something
Yeah.
we've discussed so much
Yes.
already. And like to
Also,
hear the
something.
author's view about something
Yes.
you've read is such a cool thing.
It is. Especially
Like,
as in this
you know,
podcast.
in Catcher
Yeah.
in the Rye, Holden always says, "Oh, you know,
Yeah.
there are just some books where I would just love to call the author and have a chat with them." Like,
Yeah.
we actually get to do
The
that.
amazing, yes. These were the books when I first read them, I would have loved to call the author, and now I'm actually talking to the author. It's insane.
Yeah.
So, we talked a lot
And you
about
get the listen to
Yeah, you
it.
do. It's awesome.
And for
It's good for
general
everyone.
reference, I think we can put for the questions, what would you like us to ask other authors in general?
Yes.
And then you can ask us questions you want us to ask.
Yeah.
And we usually give a heads up on our Instagram about who we are going to interview. So if you have some questions you really want to ask them, don't be
Yeah.
shy.
Yeah,
We're
I think we
here for
actually
you.
did that this time. We just kind of.
I put it out on the Instagram that we have an interview coming up, so.
Yeah. And we'll keep you informed because we'll have more interviews, hopefully. We're strangely
Yes.
at the point when we don't actually have any interviews scheduled. It doesn't also mean we won't have any because we're
We
already
have a few
planning.
candidates. We are
Yes.
already
Yeah.
planning as we
Just as
speak.
we. Yes, we are. And we're
Okay.
just outreaching right now. But until we outreach, you get to listen to this one.
So have
So without
fun.
further ado, have fun. And this is the interview. Okay, so we're here with Kimberly Brooker Bradley. Am I saying your name right?
Kimberly Brubaker Bradley, yes.
Yeah. Who wrote?
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much. Yeah. And she's the author of The War That Saved My Life, which is a book that we read back in January, I think. Am I right?
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And we're here to talk with her now, as we said it.
Yeah.
Right. So let's just start and jump into questions. Okay. So our first question is. So who's your favorite character you ever wrote in a book? And can be in any book you ever wrote.
I love Ada. She's very important to me, but probably Susan is my favorite character.
Oh, cool.
Part of that is just because she was really easy for me to write. I had to work hard to get his voice right, but Susan just sort of showed up and took over, and I enjoyed her character.
And she's the favorite character you ever wrote, or just in The War That Saved My Life?
Oh, that would be in The War That Saved My Life. Probably my favorite character I ever wrote, Della from Fighting Words.
Oh yeah, I think she's the favorite character I ever read from you. We haven't read Fighting Words in the podcast, but just as a fan, because I am, I have to tell you that I love that book so much. Yeah, it's so amazing. Well,
thank you so much. Did you read it? Did you read it in English?
I read it in English, yeah. And in the American, but I think in the original version when she stands, I know that there was some changes. Yeah, I keep wanting to get Amu to read it, and I'm sure if you read it.
Yeah, I've been wanting to read it a lot too, and
I
really love that book, but I wonder how it will translate into other languages because of the dialect, because it's sort of written the way people talk where I live, which is not very standard English all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Ada, was she inspired by anyone?
She was not inspired by any one particular person. When I wrote that book, I started off just researching about evacuation of school children in England in World War II, mostly because it didn't happen anywhere else or at any other time in history. Unique, and you know, they really did take 3 million kids away from homes overnight before the war started and send them to live with complete strangers, and the people that had to take in the kids forced to do it. They didn't always want to. Just if you had extra room in your house, you could be made to take a kid in, and so you know, that was a bunch of people, 3 million kids. And for most of them, it was really, really hard. There were kids that went to Welsh coal mining town. When they went back to their parents 6 years later, they no longer spoke English. They could no longer communicate with their parents because they had forgotten English and learned Welsh. And you know, it wasn't like today where we can do these Zooms and we can do, you couldn't even make long distance phone calls in England very easily during the war. You weren't supposed to travel. And some kids went for a short period of time, but some were really gone for all 6 years of the war. And that's a ton. And for a lot of these kids, it was very, very traumatic. And happily, a lot of them, especially as they got older, wrote things down. It's very easy to find diaries and accounts of what it was like being an evacuee in England. They still talk about it a lot. I tell American audiences here, and you guys might get, I don't know, because living in Europe, you're kind of closer to the war, because World War II wasn't fought in the US except in very few places, Pearl Harbor and a couple of North Carolina, Outer Banks islands. Yeah. We don't have the same kind of immediacy about it. Seems like something that happened a long time ago. So if you go on Amazon, the United Kingdom, and you type in evacuee, you'll get Halloween costumes of how you could dress up like an evacuee. And you know, American kids have never heard of being an evacuee, so that just, it kind of astonishes them. So I took that idea and then tried to flip it and think, you know, if it was still all these things where it was really hard and traumatic, but yet it was the best thing that could happen to someone, who would that person be?
Oh, that's so interesting that you say that because both me and Aruba, I know, but we live in Europe and we learn about the Holocaust a lot, especially as we both went. I don't know if it's that especially, but we both went to like not a Jewish school, but like an Israeli school. I still go there, and my
It
family's from
was, yeah.
Israel. Yeah, and like part of my family was the Holocaust, and like. We learned so much about the World War II, and I just never really thought of it, I guess, from that perspective. It's so interesting. Yeah, I have a question. We haven't wrote that down, but I just thought about it now. Yeah, did you know that you were going to write a sequel to it, by the way? Did you want, or when you
I
finished
actually,
it?
yeah, no, I actually, let me grab a copy of the book and I'll show you something most people don't notice. On page, I think it's page four, page three. It says, "This story I'm telling starts out 4 years ago at the beginning of the summer of 1939. But the war that
Oh,
saved
so you knew
my
it
life
already.
only goes, yeah, the
I
war
never
that saved my
noticed.
life only goes to 19, summer of 1940, and it's the war I finally won that goes to the summer of
Right. Oh, I never noticed
1941."
that. Yeah. So you knew it right away that you were going to write
I
that.
knew it all along. Yeah, I always meant it to be two books. But as having said, it was really hard to write the second book, which I didn't think it would be. It was a lot harder for me to write the second book than the first one.
So we, I don't know if we touched on this, but you write about difficult and themes, especially for children's book, like fighting words, has sexual abuse, depression, and depression also is sort of in the war that saved my life. And how do you write about these themes, and how do you decide on them?
Well, I mean, depression and anxiety and childhood trauma are all things that I've dealt with in the past. I don't have a story like Della's, but I have, a story that is hard. And so I think part of it is that I understand those issues really well. But then part of it is also that I wish there had been more books about heartaches when I was a kid, about some of these things. And I want kids today to be able to read books about them that are still hopeful. It's not
Yes.
everything doom and gloom.
Yeah.
I think it's so important to incorporate
It
this
is.
realistic effect to it because, you can't make everything
Yeah,
like you can't romanticize these realistic stories.
I'm sure that.
Speaking of like historical events that you connect them with, how do you research for your historical fiction books?
You brought.
It varies, but most of the time I need to go to where I am. So with the War That Saved My Life, there's a lot of books available in England. So you can, I mean, you can just go on Amazon.com. The internet is terrific. They have this great big book that's called Bomb Damage in London that used to be, at one point it was a map of London on in the Imperial where the War Cabinet was, and it's every little street and building as it was in 1939. And then as the war continued,
Wow.
they used marker and colored in the
Oh.
bomb damage. So it was just a little damaged. It was light, and if it was, if it got all the way damaged, it was black. And then they kind of cut the map up and turned it into this big book. So you can see, right how things were and how they were bombed. I thought that was fascinating. But then I also I did actually go to England. I decided the London part wasn't that hard to write, but the part where Ada went out into the countryside and it was all new to her, I kind of needed to see it how she saw it. So I my family and I went on a trip in early spring, and my daughter and I just drove around the countryside and we kind of got lost on purpose. And we found Ada's Hill by accident. We were just driving up this hill in kind of a woods, and then all of a sudden we came out and there was the ocean in front of us.
Wow,
And
that's really cool.
we found some old airfields that were Just, you know, they had so many of them in England because they didn't need paved runways. They just put lights out on the grass. They had them everywhere. So they were easy to build, and then they just kind of got left where they were. So yeah, I got to go look at all of that stuff. That was fascinating. The book I'm working on right now is also a World War II story, but it's not an Ada story. Mm-hmm. And it's called The Night War. It takes place in a castle in France called Chenonceau, which is built over a river, so that the castle is actually a bridge. I mean, the building itself, one door is on one side of the river, the other door is on the other side of the river. It was built in the 1500s by a very famous French queen called Catherine de' Medici. And in World War II, the river became the dividing line between occupied and unoccupied France. And so they were using the castle to get people to safety across the border.
Oh, I can't wait to read that.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I like the book a lot, but that's about...
You have another book.
My idea is...
France, don't you?
Yeah. Well, the other book set in France is called For Freedom, and that's different.
Yes, because it was that is actually... France.
Well, what's different about that is I didn't make it up. So Ada is entirely fictional, but but Dan David Hall was a real person. She, after the war, married an American GI, and she moved and lived not very far from me. She died a little more than 10 years ago now, but she, I mean, obviously was alive when I wrote, and it was her daughter worked in my husband's office and had told him that she had this really interesting story, but her mom didn't like to talk about it, and she was willing to talk about it to me. And so that was, it's really her story. I mean, we changed some of the names of people because we didn't think it was fair to use the names of real people that might still be alive, but we had no way of contacting them. But other than that, that was actually just what actually happened to her. Pretty much straight. I mean, like I kind of feel like the ending of that book, I wouldn't have gotten away with if it had been fictional.
Yeah.
but it really was what happened to her, which is astonishing. That's a little bit different, but I do like France, and I was in France visiting Chenonceau just because it's very beautiful and you can go through it. And learning about Catherine de' Medici, and I thought, oh, this is fascinating. And then I was actually in Israel at Yad Vashem, which is
I know what it is.
And found a whole section of people in France hiding Jewish children in Catholic schools. And then also this thing about the castle being a bridge where you could take through. Now, I couldn't talk to, so the people that owned Chenonceau during World War II still own it, that family. And they kind of, they talk a little bit about how it was as a bridge, they know it was, but they won't give details and they would not talk to me. So I'm guessing they just don't really want the whole story told for whatever reason, which would be pretty much on par with a lot of Europe in the war.
Yeah.
I mean, because they just, you know, it's something they had to hide for so long, they still hide it a lot of times. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's true of the evacuated kids too. I ran into a really talkative guy at a museum, an older man who was telling me all about World War II in this little town in Kent, which is a town that I based Ada's town on, although I don't name Ada's town. And he's talking and talking and talking. And my daughter came up and said, my mom's writing a book about evacuated children. And his whole face just shut down. And he said, I was an evacuee.
Oh.
And I said, where did you go? He said, Scotland. And he and walked away.
Well,
I mean, the conversation was over. You know, he wasn't going to tell me anything else. And I thought, oh, that's fascinating. I mean, you know, there has to be still so much emotion inside him that he just did not want to talk about it. So you have to respect that. But
So you wrote 7 books, and you were curious, what was the book that took you the longest and the shortest to write?
The longest so far has been Jefferson's, which is a book that's now out of print. It's about children who the children of our one of our U.S. presidents, Thomas Jefferson, and an enslaved woman that he owned named Sally Hemings. And they were this, you know, secret thing for a long time. But that book was hard in part because, again, that's about people. And there were so many things we don't know that there were things I really had to make up. I mean, I kind of went into that in the background. But you had to get everything I wanted everything that we knew about these people to be truthfully told in the book. And just have to fill in the gaps. And so that was just a ton of research, just lots and lots and lots of research. But I take a couple of years anyway, because I go through a lot of drafts. On The Night War, I'm on draft 7.
Well,
we're pretty sure I'm gonna have to do another one before we get to copy editing. So copy editing is just where they check the commas and the punctuation. For me, it's always the commas. I do commas wrong and they fix it. They check spelling, they check, you know, to make sure, like one time in copy editing, one of my early books, half of the book, I moved the parents' bedroom from the first floor to the second floor of the house. And, you know, you have to pick one, you can't. I mean, it wasn't like I like meant, but I just like, here's the bedroom on the first floor, and now whoops, in this chapter it's on this floor, and there's been no explanation. So, you know, I mean, things like that, you want to make sure you've got things correct. Yeah. Oh, I used the phrase jet engine in The War I Finally Won. Happily, we caught that because jet engines weren't invented until the 1960s. Actually, the phrase I used was actually jet fuel when there's a plane that crashes in the village.
Yeah.
But I said something about the jet fuel. But the problem is the word jet would not have been used because jet engines have not yet been invented. So, you know, the copy editing is going to catch things like that. A lot of times people think that's what we mean by revision. But in The War I Finally Won, which went through 9 drafts, I pulled off a major character until draft 7 and then decided not to.
Oh.
And I won't tell you which one it was, but somebody died. And then we thought, no, let's not kill him. And
yeah. So. A lot of people die anyway.
So, I mean, yeah, it's pretty big changes. So that's what I'm working on right now today.
At what point in the process do you decide on the title? Or for example, the word that saved every life?
When late. Yeah, I'm not good at titles historically. When I sent the first draft of The War That Saved My Life in, so it looks, it's a chunk of stuff like this. It's just, you know, typed words on the page. The title at the top of it said, Kim's new book that needs a title. That's actually what I typed because I was feeling cranky.
Well, I'll buy that book.
So, in fact, The Night War just got its title about a week ago. For a while, we were calling it Across the Castle Bridge, but we decided not to. We're going to call it The Night War. So The War That Saved My Life was, I don't know. I think my editor came with it, but it was, it's way down. Way down the process.
Do you have any names that you nearly named the book, or like names that you thought of, and not just this one, just any book that you wrote? And
I mean, I had one of my early books is called Halfway to the Sea, and I had actually that named that the geography. Yeah, okay, so I named that The Geography of Hope.
That's also a good name.
I liked the name, but the marketing department said that they couldn't expect 12-year-olds to buy a book that had the word geography in the title. So
I would have bought it
most of the time.
I like geography, so I'm a nerd.
Thank you. No, I like geography too. I liked the title, but so no, most of the time I just don't even worry about it at this point because I just feel like whatever I title it, they're going to change anyway. So,
yeah.
For Freedom, funny. I did title that one. That one, I made up the title for that.
So. Yeah. What about Fighting Words? Do you have like an early idea for that one?
Fighting Words, no. That one actually, I was a little angry when I wrote the first draft of Fighting Words. So what was written on the page on that one was the word whatever. I mean, I really did. I just typed whatever and then kept going. Because for me, when I start a book, I always put my name and address on the front, the way you would have for an old manuscript that you would mail in, even though that's not what we do now. And I put the, you know, the page numbers, and I always put something by Kimberly Brubaker Bradley, chapter one. And that's kind of how I always start when I'm typing. So I always put something in there, but a lot of times now it's just something sarcastic. Because, you know,
that's funny. Yeah. So thought I was going to ask
So what what inspires you to write, like what is the point where you say I gotta write this down because this is so good, or what
there's very few days like that, you know, because if you wait for your muse, you're going to be waiting a long time sometimes. And the muse won't ever give you the whole novel. They'll give you like a line or two or an idea, but they won't give you all the entire novel. There's an American author, he's been dead for 100 years or more, named Mark Twain, who wrote 90%.
Oh, Tom Sawyer.
Yeah, yeah. Tom Sawyer, 90% of writing is application of the seat of the pants to the seat of the chair. So, you know, but I will say, I mean, usually it's just that I end up with a story to tell. I end up with a couple of ideas that kind of come together and combine and look like they can be bigger if they're part of the same story. So, yeah. So for Ada, you know, I started off, as I said, with that idea of what would it be like for this traumatic evacuation to be a really positive thing in some life. And, you know, we put in Jamie because it would be really hard. If you take Jamie out and try to write those first couple of chapters when she was in London, it's almost unbearable because she's got to have something that she can love.
Yeah. And, yeah. Jamie's such a ray of hope or like happiness. I'm just, yeah,
I like Jamie. And then
yeah,
you know, the pony is giving her a different kind of being able to move, but it's also because I really love horses, and I, you know, I mean, I find them kind of fun to write about. So you know, you put all these little bits together and they start to be a story.
Yeah. And the one we talked about the book on the podcast, and I mean, maybe listeners remember it better than I do because we talk about a lot of books. But when we talked about this one, I think I named Jamie as my favorite character, or even if I didn't, he is definitely there. Yeah, so we kind of talked a lot, but I have to ask, have you ever faced any criticism or discouragement about the themes that you were writing about?
Some people get unhappy about them, yes. In the United States right now, there are people that don't want children's books to be about difficult subjects. But what they mean difficult is they mostly mean talking about things like racism or you know, sexual abuse or about being gay or things like that. It's a political movement. And they're, some people have tried to ban Fighting Words. And by ban, what they mean is, so, you know, you get a book out of the school library and your mother might say, that's not right book for you to read right now.
Yeah.
You need to wait a little, and that's fine. But these are people that want the book taken out of the library so nobody can read it. And that's something that I think is wrong. That has been, it's most of that criticism has been aimed at Fighting Words. I actually expected more aimed at Jefferson. Well, I got some at Jefferson's Sons too. Some people were very angry at the idea that a president might have had children who were Black, but they didn't seem to mind that the president owned a person. So that seemed to me to be the wrong to be upset about. So it was hard for me to take
comments.
Well, and the other thing is, so they have DNA evidence. Thomas Jefferson is the father of these children, but the evidence they have isn't conclusive because of the way they tested it. But if they needed conclusive evidence, all they would have to do is dig up Thomas Jefferson, because his grave is, you know, we know where his grave is.
Yeah.
And they could get the DNA and have conclusive evidence, but nobody wants to do that because we said, well, you know, this is pretty obvious here. You could put together all these different kinds of evidence and it's clear, but you know, the people that don't want it to be true, it's very weird. It shouldn't be like that. And I don't think it's adults in the United States that are being stupid, not kids.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping we wait 20 years and everybody acts a lot more sensibly.
Yeah, it is very weird, especially as you said that you got discouragement over fighting words, but I think that the fact that it's about kids and it's believable that actually could happen speaks a lot. So if I'd read that as a person who's been sexually abused or we know anyone who's been sexually abused, I'm sure it would help me. So we're almost running out of time, but we got like one more question to ask.
So lastly, wanted to ask you as a reader or maybe also as a writer, what genres or kinds of books do you like to read for pleasure, let's say?
Oh, I read a lot of different books for pleasure. I love to read historical fiction. I don't know if you know Elizabeth Wein, W-E-I-N, who wrote a book called Codename Verity. I love her books. She's got a new one coming out. I love Kate DiCamillo's books. I love, there's a new writer in the United States called Christian Tina Sutornvat, who writes, her new book is called A Wish in the Dark. Not her book, but yeah, I love her stuff. I love that fantasy that is a little different.
She's so good. Yeah.
I actually am starting to really enjoy graphic novels, which I didn't. I wasn't that impressed with them. It's I actually do better with words on a page than pictures. It's easier for me. And for some people, it's the opposite. So graphic novels are a little easier. So I'm finding it really interesting how you can write turning some novels into graphic novels. And like they did a graphic novel version of The Diary of Anne Frank.
Oh yeah.
And it's super good. I mean, you wouldn't necessarily think so, but too, it's, it's different. It. Have you read it?
I think I read it.
I read that one. Oh yeah, please.
Keep
going. No, I was just saying that I like a lot of stuff, but those are the things I'm reading now. And then adult books, I read a lot of mysteries and romance novels, and also very weird nonfiction. I like very strange nonfiction. It makes my husband nervous sometimes. It'll be a book on like how people die in the Grand Canyon or something, you know, and he'll be thinking, oh, you don't need to know this. I'm like, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Or I read a whole book on the plague, you know.
Well, that's interesting. So we've run out of time, but it's so interesting to talk to you. It was really, really fun. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
You're very welcome. Yes. I enjoyed meeting both of you.
We love meeting you. So thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you.
So this was our interview was your with Kimberly.
We just actually finished the interview too, so it's very relevant.
It is.
And we hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, we did.
It was, for sure. Again,
it was so interesting. Yeah, I was really, it was really eye-opening for me, especially what she said about World War II in the United States, because I've never been, so I know how it works out there.
Yeah, we just talked about it before recording, that it's such an interesting, for us being Europeans, or like living whole of our lives in Europe, and seeing how from another perspective, because we learn about this in school and we live basically in the past of this. And it's such a cool perspective to listen to hear from someone.
When you live in Europe, or at least I feel like that, if you go to a place in Europe, and there's something like a Holocaust memorial, you go. I don't know if it's just me or my family or, you know, my school. My family has been in the Holocaust, so maybe it's that. But I've been to the Berlin Wall, the remains of that, and I've seen memorials, and it was really interesting to talk with someone who gave me another perspective on that. And it was really, really nice. So
just a heads up on what's coming up.
We have
a continuation of the Harry Potter series coming out in April.
If you haven't listened to the first one, you should. It was interesting. I don't know.
It was really cool.
Yeah, I was told it's good. I was telling to the rest of it, actually, my friend, but I think that this friend only listened to this one, so I don't know how true that is, but she liked it, so.
Okay, so here, we have a witness.
And we have our next episode coming up, which is the To Kill a Mockingbird. It's coming up on the 1st of April.
Yes!
And this is not a joke. This is, I know, April Fools. We forgot to mention that. But it is actually going to be up. Yeah. You just got my reference to Kill What. I was like, it's not a joke. I was like, what? Why should it be? Because we're not a joke. We're serious people.
So, no, it's not April Fool.
Yeah. So, and
another thing that's coming up soon is our spring seasonal episode. Which will be coming most likely on the 15th of April.
Yes. So that's another question we'll put in the question box if you are on a Spotify listener, and if you're not, you can just DM us about which books would you say are very springy, which books make you think of spring.
Yeah, and speaking of being Spotify listeners, we have like these statistics about our listeners.
Yeah.
And I just saw last time, I can check now for a reference, that a great amount of our listeners are listening from other platforms. Obviously, the majority is on Spotify, but there are quite a few of you guys, 14% on Apple Podcasts, and then a Pandora and web browser, and even Amazon Music. So if you don't have the option of filling out
these question forms there,
then you can DM us or comment on any of our posts with your questions, and we'll see them.
To be honest, we have most of these questions on our Instagram, in our stories, or in our posts. So you can ask
that.
And if you don't have Instagram, you can message us on Goodreads, or you can just send a Gmail for us, which we do check.
Yeah.
We love that. Also, if you think that it's cool to hear our voice, and you would want us to hear your voice, then you can call our voicemail, and we'll play your voicemail
in that, which is in the description in all platforms.
Yeah, and we'll be absolutely delighted to hear your voice, because it's fun.
Okay. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being here. And thank you and shout out to Kimberly. Thank you so much. And we'll see you in April. Bye.
Yes, bye.